Hello, everybody. This is John Costa with my colleague Rob Watson. And we're normally doing our Spotlight on Heritage or Spotlight on Art. And we have lots of specials that people would have heard over the last 12 months or so. And today's another special one, Spotlight on Radio, because it is World Radio Day 2026, Friday the 13th of February. And I've been joined by one new friend and one very long-term friend. Notice I didn't use the word old there, Helen. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Helen from the Evington Echo. Always good to see you. Still in the game, still fighting, still passionate about community media and stuff. So I'm really interested to find out a little bit more about your thoughts on community radio. And also, Shamela. Yeah. And it's lovely to speak to you. I'll let you both introduce yourselves because it'll be easier rather than my view of it. But I had a really interesting conversation with you recently about the research you're doing. So let's go with you, being as you're new to any of our listeners. So introduce yourself.
So my name is Shamela Jaffrey, and I am a former BBC journalist from Pakistan.
Did you notice everybody sat up straight then when you said that? We all looked a little bit more professional trying to...
And currently I'm doing a PhD at the University of Leeds. My research is about Leicester and its media ecology. I'm examining the role of disinformation during the 2022 Troubles. And I am on an attachment with Decentered Media, with Rob Watson. So I'm in the
Never
city.
Never heard of him. Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you for taking the time to come and join us today. And just for people that are listening after this, we're heading off to Leicester High School for Girls to listen to some very passionate South Asian ladies talking about some issues that are important to them. And we'll come at it from a radio perspective as well. So, Helen, can you introduce yourself as well?
Yes, my name's Helen Petman, and I've been the editor of the Evington Echo for over 20 years now, rather too long. We're not involved. I'm only involved in radio because I know you, John, and I know Rob. But what we do is a community magazine, which goes out... bi-monthly, and goes to 6,000 people just in the local area. And then when I've met Rob, he helped us sort out our website, so that's now got articles on that are worth reading, I think.
Brilliant. Well, as always, we throw around the word legend, and it's normally people putting hashtag legend after their own name on social media, but Helen is a legend when it comes to doing social media. Certainly before I was doing Citizen's Eye and why Rob was doing his research with his PhD about community media, Helen was out there on the front line doing it. So always wonderful to talk to you. Self-effacing and very humble as always, but you know, you are to us someone very important and precious, so welcome and thank you for joining us. Rob, do you want to introduce yourself? I mean, as you got name checked earlier.
Yeah, I suppose I should say something.
BBC World, BBC journalist from Pakistan.
Yeah, and a long-standing editor of the Evington Echo. Yeah, I'm Rob Watson, and I suppose I always say I just do stuff around community media, but that involves supporting Source Sound as a community radio station here in Leicester, which gives us the opportunity to broadcast across the city and what we call what's known as the Leicester urban area. So we provide a general service which is entertaining and informing, but it gives people a sense of place-based identity. So it's about, and in a world that rapidly changes with the flux and the churn of people coming to Leicester, whether permanently or temporarily, what is it that our radio and our media can provide for them? And then also I run another radio station, an arts-based radio station called Radio Leo, which is about, well, I'm not quite sure what it's about at this point, but we're working on that. But it's a kind of emergent arts radio, so quite a lot of experience with radio.
Brilliant. I could introduce myself in multiple
Please
ways,
do.
But the other day my partner told me that her daughter had rung her and said that she told her our 10-year-old grandson to go to sleep, stop doing whatever he was doing, gaming, find something on YouTube and fall asleep. And she could hear my voice, and she went in and he'd Googled John Costa and was watching my YouTube channel. So I'm not going to introduce myself. If you want to find out about me, just Google me. And I'm not the bald Canadian folk singer guy called John Costa, but there we go. Right, so let's dive into, obviously it's World Radio Day, and the actual theme for World Radio Day this year is technology alone does not build trust, radio broadcasters do. And I think the interesting thing about that particular phrase is it builds perfectly with your research, Shamalia, here in Leicester, about trust and misinformation and disinformation about a specific event. And certainly with Helen's perspective, I think with community media generally, that building of trust through being the editor of a magazine that serviced an area unbroken for 20 years, well over 300 copies, as we well know when we did our event recently. And obviously, Rob, from your perspective, using technology like we are here today, popping up in adult education here in Leicester, we're able to record something from a group of people that then can be shared and listened to in every part of the world because of the way the web and the internet and all that sort of stuff here is in 2026. So let's just go round and start with you, Shamalia, about how do you personally define trust in relation to radio? And when have you felt the trust most strongly as a listener? I mean, obviously, feel free to use an example from home, not just while you've been here in Leicester.
Yeah, so I think radio is... I think I like radio because of its intimacy. So basically I'm a television journalist and I'm trained to, you know, look into a frame and pay attention to. But then in a way that's also very informative, but if you just focus on sound, I think that's another experience. So it is the closeness. So there is no kind of distraction in between. So sometimes visual is distraction. So I think that's one way of looking at it. It's very close and it's intimate. So that's one thing. The other thing is, of course, access. Many people still, where I come from, radio is, you know, you would see, you know, shepherds in deserts and they have a transistor on them. So I think that's a form of also trust, closeness. But I will just give you a very quick story about trust of radio. Is that in 2013, it was a really bad year for my country. I mean, still, there is low-intensity war going on. But this, you know, son of a former prime minister was abducted, right? And by the Taliban. And he was... Later, you know, everybody found out he was taken to Afghanistan, where he stayed in captivity for a few years. So when he returns, and I remember I was deployed to cover that, you know, he was coming back and he was from Lahore, which is my city, an eastern city in Pakistan. And we were deployed outside. And it was a really big day. And he came back and he was not, of course, talking to anyone at that point. A huge, like, international media on the outside. So we saw him and he just went inside and all of us were standing. So the BBC asked me to do As Live. So it's when you record something and send it over. And I did it for the BBC World TV. And I did it and then I left. My crew was there. My mother was unwell. She was in the hospital, so I had to leave. So the next hour when it was kind of, you know, on air, and probably he saw it, and he sent someone outside asking after me. I wasn't there, so my producer went inside thinking that probably he's offering the BBC an interview or something. And he said, I just wanted to meet her because when I was in captivity, I used to look forward to her radio, you know, features and packages. And that was one of my only kind of, you know, real connections, because the Taliban would always have radio on them, the guards, prison guards, and they were very much into BBC Urdu service. So that's how he knew me, and he wanted to meet me, and I would use a lot of ambient sound, the way we do the BBC storytelling.
So you were a connection else. To the so outside
world. So that was
world.
A connection. And then also richness of sound, because I would use, and I would do, like, storytelling, like proper radio storytelling, creating pictures and sound-driven story. So I think that stayed with him. So that's, you know, one form of, I would say, wow, trust of connection with
him. I think that's an incredible story. I mean, it's interesting for our listeners who obviously are not looking at a picture of this unless they're looking at it on the website where we'll put a poster of the four of us, is the fact you used the word transistor, which I think instantly dated you, because I'm not sure a young person would even know the word transistor now unless they were really into vinyl and old technology. But it's interesting, isn't it? And there was an article from a good friend that Rob and I know from our international community media days of doing Citizen's Eye when we first connected with Baslu, who's in charge of an NGO of community radio stations in Bangladesh, and he was just commenting on the BBC World Service and still having the value of that. And it's interesting, that was a comment I was going to make, and you've instantly thought of, you've mentioned there about the role that the BBC has, and it's going through a real sort of tough time here in the UK, people thinking about should it exist, should it, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's an interesting one. Fantastic, great way to start. So Helen, let's come to you. I'll remind you of the question. So how do you personally define trust in relation to radio? And then the second one is, do you have a specific story that you can think of when you felt a real strong connection as a listener to something that you were hearing?
Yes, actually, it happened this morning. I was happening to listen to, on Radio 4, and Michael Mopogo, who's a children's author.
Warhorse was, yes, one of his books, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, but he came on and he talked about Treasure Island. And he said he'd been brought up on Enid Blyton, but that then when he got a copy of Treasure Island, it was wow. And he spoke about the fact that everybody met Long John Silver, and he was a lovely, amiable man. And then he'd helped Jim Hawkins, and he'd gone on his boat with Long John Silver and his men. And then he thought, oh, I'd really like an apple. So he went to try and find an apple, and he sort of got into the apple barrel. And just at that time, Long John Silver came along, and he heard him talking, and suddenly changed everything, and that trust had gone, and he knew that from that moment on he was the one that had to save the ship and do everything. And my experience of trust is that I get it wrong, and I have got it wrong on a number of occasions.
By being too trusting towards individuals, you mean?
Yes, to, yeah, being too trusting towards people. And in the end, it's almost like They want me for what I've got, the money that we've collected, or, you know, in the bank they want to take over our operation, and I think that's an incredibly difficult thing to build trust.
It's interesting as well, isn't it? Because normally these people, that they might be new to you, but you have to find ways of trusting them. And sort of in 2026, we'd look, yes, at someone's LinkedIn profile, someone's media coverage, maybe if, yes, they've been in a particular local magazine, are they a regular on local radio, have they been on television and stuff. So we kind of use the media as well as a gatekeeping way of being able to investigate and make decisions about
and
people.
And decide, yes, yeah, that yeah, they're not just after your money.
Yeah,
it's usually money at the bottom of it.
Yeah,
know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I want my street to be in bloom rather than Evington in bloom, don't you? Do you like what I did there, Rob? Did you see that? So, Rob, come and move on to you then. How do you personally define trust in relation to radio? This must be a really interesting one, because you've got your own service that you've got with Radio Lear on DAB and the internet. You've got your involvement in Source Sound as one of the founding directors, but also you've got all this experience from setting up things like Demon FM over 20 years ago now at DMU. So you've got a lot of experience of dealing with radio.
Well, I think there's kind of two elements of this in a way. One, there's the crisis of trust about media and our politics at the moment, which is something we can talk about a lot. But then there's also the element which is how you drive trust is about participation and involvement. So it's people, as Helen says, people see things from the outside and they look at it as being something that they can extract, they can take, and that it's there for the taking. But when you get to, and as Shamelia described somebody who's if like locked away, and then it's a lifeline for people to give them a connection with the outside world, then you realise that the process of trust has to go two ways. So we've got a problem at the moment with the BBC particularly has this crisis of trust about its editorial processes and values, which has put everybody on a kind of alert status. Where any move that the BBC makes, everybody's on it, everybody's jumping on it, and it's like kind of, you know, they've been, you know, taken to court in America by Trump, that kind of thing. And it's, you know, there's huge issues about the Director General has resigned, and there's all of these massive issues, and once you lose that trust, you never get it back, so you have to do something completely different. Where it relates to a hope, I mean, I don't really know in terms of the projects that, and the way I work is really, well, we haven't got any money, and all we can offer you is blood, sweat and tears to come and get involved and try and help promote and support and develop. So we don't get people who are trying to come and... we get people who like the idea of radio, but don't... Very quickly, they figure out that they've got to do a lot of hard work to make that happen. So you kind of... It's a filtering process for getting rid of the people that, the, you know, to push out the people, or to keep at arm's length the people who are there just to serve their own ego needs. They've seen what they want and they're acting to get something out of it. Whereas when you get involved with community radio, community media, there's an awful lot of work that you have to do. The books, you have to do the accounting, you have to do the fundraising, you have to do the governance, you have to do the editorial management, you have to train people, you have to do everything. And you're volunteering for that. You're not getting any money for it. So it's not an attractive proposition. But in a way, as people, if people understand that and we communicate that properly, then that gives us a trusted status within our communities, because we're not there trying to just get money. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting money from people, but there's just get money from people or just get something. So that trust is based on, for community media, I think, is based on the essential knowledge that it's just ordinary people getting involved, trying to do something for their local neighbourhood, their community, the place where they live. And they're not serving somebody in, you know, California, or, you know, somewhere in, you know, some other huge corporate conglomerate. And they're not serving the senior managers at the BBC who've got their agenda. There's no, it's our agenda. So trust is built into, we would hope is built into it. But nobody trusts our media. There's a general level of trust about journalism. You know, it's people trust journalists less than they trust double glazing salesmen. So there's something not right at the moment about the way this process is working and is perceived. And we kind of need to think about, and I think there's opportunities with AI and technology, whereas a lot of people are kind of distrustful of the AI for its in itself. I actually see it as glass half full rather than half empty.
Interesting. All three of you made some really interesting comments. I mean, I trust Shamelia as a BBC journalist, simply because, not because this other person listened to her while he was locked up, and trust you for the outside world, but you've got a green jumper and you look really nice, and that really is
the green mic
to go with your jumper. See, that's Rob doing what Rob does. And this is, and of course this is the thing with technology and social media now, isn't it? It's about, like, you know, that famous picture of Ed, what's the former leader of the Labour Party, Ed Miliband, when he was eating that bacon sandwich, yeah. And like, he was vilified for, you know, would you trust this man? Look how he eats a bacon sandwich. Well, it's suddenly like, you must be trustworthy because you've got a nice green jumper on. And so we've got into this American style.
Well, we always say, when you've learned to fake sincerity, you've got it made. Yeah. And so much of our media is based around this idea of fake persona management. And it's all, you know, you generate trust because you act in a certain way, you present yourself in a certain way. But that's nothing to do with trust. It's all about, it's the human element that people really very quickly tune into with somebody. We can spot people who are bluffing. I use the polite version of that phrase, who are bluffing straight away. And audio is a great way of doing that, because you're not presented with the kind of the looks and the glamour and the soft focus lens and all the rest of it, what you get is that person's voice, and we are attuned over, you know, telling stories and believing stories and believing accounts and, you know, how people represent news. It comes down to that there's a real art and skill to be the trusted tribune, if you like.
And trust, I think, is something which is earned, and it is earned over time. So it's, you know, you have to kind of put in some work, and you have to show up, and you have to be, you know. So it doesn't come like, you know, instantly. It takes time, and it is earned, I think.
Do you think there's a lot of people that are getting substandard? Maybe that's not the right terminology, because everyone will know the university I'm thinking about. But people that are able to pass a degree now without much hard work. It's a lot easier than it used to be and stuff, and can get into our mainstream media. And are expecting... Let me finish.
Sorry. We've never done that.
I'm going to push back about it. Yeah, it's Friday the 13th, mate. It's unlucky for some. It's an important point, and actually I'll come to you to answer it, is the fact that what's happening is we're getting people that are qualified but unqualified in life and in real experience that are getting into serious positions of power because they've got influence through the mainstream media, and they're therefore given the trust because of the platform they're on, but they are not a nice person.
It's the fake it till you make it mentality that's become dominant. And yet we're not teaching people, and we're not encouraging the values of trust, account. This is why embedded local media and communities is so important, because Helen will demonstrate this. As the editor of long-standing editor of the Evington Echo, you walk down the street, and what happens? People talk to you.
Oh yes, they ask me to do things.
Describe it. How does that influence your way that you think about the Echo and the stories that you run?
Because clearly, people are reading it, aren't they? They might not tell you that it's wonderful, but they'll tell you if there's a problem.
I don't get much feedback straight after an edition goes out. No, but. Unless it's something wrong.
Yeah.
But when I go out, yes, they usually are saying, we've got this problem, like this fence is falling down, what shall I do about it? Or there's loads of litter, and what shall I do about that? Or, you know, how... and their concern now, actually, is that because I've been writing about Saw Sound and going online a bit more, they're getting really worried that the magazine might stop.
Okay, so we're back to that. People are like, they might not tell you they like it or they use it or that it's useful. But as soon as you turn around and say, well, after 20 years, no one, because I can't find anybody that's trustworthy to hand it on to, we get to the point where you suddenly don't want it to go because you like the fact it drops through your door. I always think of people when they buy houses and you go, and you know, when you go in somewhere and the house is for sale and it's got, you know, the gas cooker stuff, it's got this and all that. And on there is this, and we've got our own local community magazine. And you go, do you read it? Have you ever used it? Have you ever written anything for it? Have you ever been to an event that is in there? But for some reason, having a library in your village or having a community magazine is a definition as to whether there's a community, which is completely fake because it doesn't exist, because people commute. So for me, I think this is leads nicely into the second question, if I may, steering us along, is, Shamala, is trust something that comes from the technology that we use, or is it from people and relationships behind the microphone? Now, obviously, your first story you shared is a good one. So,
if we are strictly talking about community media, then I think it is your personal relationships. But if it is a radio at the national level, I think it's not possible for, of course, the reporter or the journalist to, you know everybody or to be, in a way, like physically part of different communities. So it just depends. But if it is a small community setup, then I think personal relationships matter and they add to your credibility. But if it's, you know, at the national level, I think it sometimes is that how you take stand on different things. And if you are not just a presenter, but also a journalist, your own journalism, body of your work. So I think that everything also kind of play a role in earning that
trust. How do you think your time here in Leicester so far has shaped your view of a journalist as to the value of something like community media that you may not have had much experience of before because you've been dealing with a main broadcaster at a national level?
Yes, I did not have that kind of experience of community media, but I always held it like in a great, you know, regard. So when I was given this, in a way, it was they asked me to find any organization. So mostly what people would do for this placement thing, which is part of my scholarship, the way my PhD is funded, they look up for like, they would find big organization, national, international organization. People would want to travel to another country to do something. But I wanted to do something at grassroots level simply because I always loved the idea of like community media, community radios. And also, you know, I thought I've done that, you know, national and international. I want to do this now, you know. So it has been a wonderful experience. People don't see really material value attached to it. No glamour, no kind of, you know, that star value at the bigger level. But it is so sweet. And if you are into it, if you are able to do something, create a difference or change something within your community, people around you, real people that you know face to face, I don't think that there is, you know, that's a feeling, that's a very different feeling from what you do with national broadcast or international media.
I love that. Through the power of the internet, you were able to stub your toe on decentered media and find Rob.
Well, I mean, one of the interesting things and kind of following on from that is how technology really should be enabling and empowering. And we unfortunately live in the UK. The process that we've gone through in the last 10, 20 years has been about using technology to centralise, using technology to homogenize and using it to pull everything into the middle so it becomes uniform. And so what we've got is the BBC's processes and the commercial radio processes are all about standardization and centralized supply. So there's a station in London that basically produces most of the content, which is badged up as if it was supposedly local. The technology doesn't have to work that way. It can work the other way and push things away from the centre. So hence calling my company Decentred Media. It's about decentralisation. The technology, we're sitting around in Leicester Adult Education Centre with equipment which is I've kind of cobbled together over the years, but it wasn't available 10 years ago. And we can do stuff at a relatively low cost. Okay, it might not have the high level of professional standards, but it's good enough to get a radio program out with a few tweaks, a little bit of knowledge. We don't need the big outside broadcast cars that the BBC used to use. We don't need six producers anymore. We don't need all of the kind of the checks and balances because we all understand we're all educated and trained on editorial responsibility. As you know, we've got that experience. We need to pass that on to other people. But you don't need a centralised approval committee that you've got to go to for us to do this programme because we take responsibility for it. And I think too much, and policy and legislation in the UK for broadcast and radio broadcast, there's a review just been announced by both Ofcom and DCMS into licensing for broadcast radio and the future of broadcast radio in the UK, and it completely ignores this decentralized model. It really just sticks with the centralized approval committees, central management, and it's like that's not the world we live in now. You know, everybody else out there is using their smartphones and they're using their you know, Spotify and Apple to get music, and they're using X and Facebook and wherever to get local news. And the big corporations are kind of trying to play catch up with that, and they're not trusting people to create and share their own content. And that's a big difference, I think.
And the BBC, I mean, I left the BBC in 2024, and it is becoming the, you know, planning and commissioning is becoming more centralized. So it is their way of cutting costs. So, you know, they wanted to avoid duplication and everything. So if for international bureaus, this approach may work. But if you think about, you know, communities here, and I've been talking to people, and they are upset that the BBC is... It seems more distant than ever before. It is
you
more
mean,
BBC.
You mean BBC
the BBC Leicester.
East Midlands.
Well, I'm going to ask John this because we've not asked John any questions up to this point.
But, this is deliberate.
But you used to be a regular on BBC Leicester. When was the last time you appeared on BBC Leicester?
A couple of years ago.
Why has that happened?
Because they're just not interested in Leicester-only focused events, because I run the Saturday Heritage Fair here. It was, if it's not East Midlands, so Derby and Nottingham as well. If I was doing a Saturday Heritage Fair in all three cities, that'd be fine. So I think that, for me, as soon as, you know, you lose things like the radio car or your ability to be able to connect locally, for me, that would be trust. You know, being able to see someone that turned up in your local community, surrounded by people doing a live outside broadcast, that for me is trust because it's real. But that's what underpinned everything about Citizen's Eye for 7 years, which was if you weren't there... Citizen's Eye would film it, and I wouldn't. I mean, I remember we had the classic example of that was we had the councillor Manjula Sood recently died, sadly, after many years. And I remember when she was Lord Mayor, the 9th, 12th Lancers got the freedom of the city of Leicester, and they marched in, formed up on Town Hall Square, and then marched off again. And she was the Lord Mayor, so she came out of the Town Hall and she inspected them. And that sort of stuff. And I remember I filmed two solid 10-minute chunks, which I put on YouTube. And I sent her the link because I knew her from the Special Olympics days. And she said to me, John, I enjoyed watching your two 10-minute recordings. She said, because then I actually found out what was going on. She said, because as the Lord Mayor, I came down the steps, was guided to look at the front rank, back, there was a bit going on, a bit of marching about, and like she said, it was only when I watched your thing I saw all the crowd at the back and how many people there were packed into Town Hall Square. So by not running around and trying to be clever as a journalist, by being a community reporter, was I was there. If you weren't, if you watched my content, you knew what was going on. The person that was the VIP actually learnt more about the event from watching my unscripted, no comment, just kind of stuff. Because she realised that this is what was actually happening, and I think that's what we need to be thinking about a little bit more, that it's great that through technology and stuff we can centralise things and all that sort of stuff, but surely the centralisation should come from HR and PR and marketing and transport and petrol costs. It shouldn't come from where stories are from who they represent, because ultimately... The reason you'd want someone to listen to Sore Sound is because they're from Leicester. If I suddenly said to you all, let's get caught up on the fact that Sore Sound could service everybody in the UK, the content would just change. And then suddenly doing things like this would be of complete disinterest to people because it'd be a national programme.
We're on in Rugby, Loughborough, Hinckley soon. We say we're from Leicester, but we're for the East Midlands in a way. And it's like there's nothing wrong with having a base. There's nothing wrong with having a focus. And it's all like people are almost scared of that. I just want to ask Helen about the value that's built up in the Evington Echo. What do you think we should be doing to plan to make sure that that continues and that value is recognised? And
I've been writing... I've been... researching this for a long time, and we are working now to put in place clear things like who are our members, how do we make sure that those members are with us and obey and really want to be on our side with our charitable purposes. And that is quite a lot of hard work to do. And then it's also about who can we trust on our board of trustees, and what jobs are we going to have on the board of trustees that actually help promote the objects that we really want to get over. And then it's looking at, well, historically, this is how we've tried to fill our objectives, but maybe there's other ways of filling those objectives that could be more sustainable than the way we are doing it at the minute. So it's looking at all of that, and it takes time and effort to actually think it through.
So, final question, because we're coming towards the end of the recording now. What skills do you think are important for building trust as a broadcaster? What skills do you need?
I think starting.
I wasn't going to ask you the first question.
Okay.
See, mainstream media broadcast, BBC. I need to answer the first question.
No, I thought I was. That has been the format so far. So I thought.
Absolutely, you are perfectly right. I was just being really cheeky on Friday the 13th. It's like question time, isn't it? Like you know. So. Yeah. Oh, actually, let's come to you because you're the grown up in the room. Let's go. Let's come to you. Yeah.
So I think again, it is earned over time, but fact checking. Whatever you believe in, it's not that everybody would, and talking about opinion, but sticking with facts. If you are using, so because this year's theme was AI, so if you are using AI, just be disclosures. So whatever is being truthful and being honest, I think, and then over time, and being there, being present, and then standing up for, for the community, if it is community set up. So I think these are a few things that can...
Because I think that's really important, isn't it? Because it's like, having a reputation or building your own personal brand, I can't think of a better term of that, your kind of online persona is important, because what it means is that you've been around a while, you've been around the block. Sometimes it can be used against you because you're a bit too old, because, you can't use the technology, or you might not translate well onto TikTok. And you go, well, I'm not wanting to go on TikTok and do that. So people are always driving technology and new innovations, new ways like social media of sharing stuff. Well, actually, I want to be a radio broadcaster, and I want to be on radio, and I'm known for being on radio. So that's a real kind of challenge. Rob, so, from your perspective... That kind of skills, do you think?
I think the first step, there's plenty of lots of skills that people can bring to this. I think the first step, though, is rolling your sleeves up and knowing that you've got to get involved. If you've got a complaint about media, it's fine. If you just want to subscribe to Netflix and Amazon and everybody else and just consume stuff, that's great. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be able to do that, and there's lots of market choices out there that you can follow. But if you're not happy with what you're getting and you want to see some change, don't just complain about it. Don't just be political about it or ideological about it. Roll your sleeves up and get involved. Go and support or set up, because it's really easy to do now, as you say. You can set up. More people are now watching YouTube in the UK than are watching all of the BBC's television channels combined. And the thing people say about that is it's not, YouTube is not a platform. It's a platform, not a channel. It's millions and millions of independent content creators. Lots of separate. It's a whole different way of looking at it. And those people have said, I'm not happy with what I see being reported about my town, where I live, the things I'm interested in. I'm going to set up and do my own. And that's the attitude that you've got to have now. It's like kind of you. If you're not rolling your sleeves up and doing it yourself, that DIY ethos, why complain? And making your own content and producing your own content and putting it out there gives you the right to complain about other people and what access you've got to finance, power, regulation, all those kind of things. That follows because you're doing something. You're not just complaining and sitting there like an armchair moaner. You're actually doing something, and you're out there meeting people. So that's the number one factor, I'd say.
So, Helen, if you were given... I don't know, maybe if you were 20 years younger, maybe if we all were 20 years younger and we could help you set up Evington Echo Media. And so alongside your printed magazine, I'm bowing now to your printed magazine, Evington Echo Radio and Evington Echo TV and all this sort of stuff. Do you think that there's an appetite for that kind of stuff? Or do you think people like the fact that, because it's what I would describe as old school, when Tina and I print newspapers, for example, people always say to us, I really enjoyed reading that. I don't normally read a newspaper. So actually picking up a newspaper, talking about some of your heritage things was really interesting. Do you think that because people consume news and all those kind of things online, that actually picking up a copy of the Evington Echo would be the reason why people would turn around and go, I want to keep it. You know what I mean? I trust it because it's printed and therefore it's real.
Yes, but that isn't enough reason to do it. And yes, if I was going back again, I would be much... I wouldn't jump in as fast as I did before. I would be looking at who was there with me, who was doing what, and always going back to why are you doing this, and making sure that when you set it up, you haven't got a Long John Silver on your board.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thanks for both for all three of you joining us. What should I say? You two joining Rob and I today on World Radio Day. So final comment, World Radio Day 2026. What do you think is the most important thing we should be concentrating thinking about, Shamali?
And I think
I'll come to you because you're BBC.
So I think
have you had fun today?
Yes,
that's
of course.
Most important thing.
Of course. Yeah. So yes, I think it's thinking about now with the AI, you know, AI and media. The relationship.
So automated stuff that's just created. Yes. You think the authenticity of a real person
yes.
is key.
Yes. So there are, of course, also advantages, convenience. You know, you can make summaries. You can fact check things. There are tools available. Archiving, all these things have become, you know, it is more convenient because of AI. You can use AI to enhance your work and, you know, make your processes easier. But there are also questions about, for instance, data protection, because mostly there are third parties involved. And then also about authenticity, like, would you want somebody to clone your voice when you are dead and broadcast in your... I think it's creepy. And it's also about trust. And are we replacing human warmth and relationship with cloned and synthetic voices? So I think this is something that we should be...
I'm terrified now because it's like, did you hear John Costner from Citizen's Eye? He's died.
Yeah.
Or did he?
Yeah.
He's still around everywhere. Yeah. Still around everywhere on the internet. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah. Helen, World Radio Day 2026, what do you think is a really important thing for people to think about from a radio perspective?
I think the issue of trust is the important thing to think about.
Okay. Rob?
I think Zach Laserfinger and Stella Bouquet and Sally Octopus on Sore Sound are the future. And regular listeners to Sore Sound will know who these are.
Yeah. And give us in one sentence what those three people represent and how they're
Stability, regularity, and it allows us to... just get on with the rest of the stuff without having to constantly look over our shoulders to kind of see, to deal with the, how do you describe it? To deal with the stuff that it can often be frustrating and annoying all the time. To have to keep going back over the basics all the time. This just gives us a level playing field to get content out, which we can then build on. And it's raised the level. It's raised the standard. You know, before we were kind of in the shallows and we were kind of, you know, the water was lapping around our ankles constantly. We've been able to put some stilts and a platform in place where this provides a certain level of minimum level of content, and then we can build on top of that.
Okay, so my final comment on World Radio Day 2026 is that if you were to look at any of the mainstream media today, if you were to look at read anything, watch anything or listen to anything, you'd think there was only one person in America doing anything that was worth reporting on. And I think that community radio is still, for your average citizen of the world, an opportunity to be able to get into the media space, to be able to share what's important with you and probably important to those people who are around you. But even if it's a local perspective and interpretation of the impact of what that person in America is doing, that's fine. But at least you are talking about your place and people and the events that are going on around you rather than just leaving it to be dominated in that. And that's my final comment. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.